Potter's Heading Cast, episode 77. This week, as you might be hearing right now, we don't have the very soothing voice of Eden together with us because, let's see, I don't know. Let's say he went off to a Brandon Sanderson signing event because we all know Brandon Sanderson is his favorite author and he just couldn't contain himself and he had to fly across the country to go to one. And no, I don't, he just can't make it. But instead, we have a very special guest, and that guest happens to be, as you can see from the episode title, Mikey Goodman of Sixth, the legendary UK tech metal band, Sixth, whose next album, The Future in Whose Eyes, is coming out on the 2nd of June. I was really glad that I was able to talk to Mikey, and this was a pretty cool interview, so check it out. And next week, we'll be returning back to our regular format when Eden is done getting all his Brandon Sanderson tattoos signed so that he can get the signature tattooed over. Anyway, bye. So, hi, Mikey. I'm super happy to have you here. I really look up to you as a influence, as a vocalist myself, actually.
Awesome.
So I'm super hyped, and Sixth is one of my favorite bands as well. So if we just get right into it then. You said you just told me you were shooting a video. Can you talk about that, or is that like secret?
Yeah, well, actually, I went to my record company and I put white morph hats on everyone and gloves, and they're all wearing suits, and I just shot a few shots for an extra part in our video because we were shooting a video the other day for Golden Cufflinks.
Oh, nice.
And so, yeah, I just thought, oh, I need a few extra little bits for it. And it was to do with the lyrics of that song. So, yeah, that was it.
So I have listened to the promo of the album, and the album The Future in Whose Eyes, by the way, for the listeners. And I really love it, by the way. So I haven't been able to really dig deep into the lyrics yet. But since you mentioned lyrics, one thing that I've kind of noticed as a theme in your stuff overall is kind of this theme of urban decay, and I've seen it in the videos for like Outside the Coma as well, and I was wondering, yeah, like, is there like a kind of theme that you're trying to convey with that stuff? Is there like an overall message?
Well, it's kind of like humanity, we evolve as much as we devolve, you know what I mean? We would we build up cities, and then there's also the extreme riches and the extreme poor, and it's also like, you know, the world builds weapons and shit to destroy each other.
Yeah,
it's like humanity, like if you think about it, humans, it's fucking crazy. It's like, oh, sorry, I don't know if
you can totally go crazy.
Okay. I just think it's crazy. Why do we want to destroy each other? So it's just like human self-destructive behavior goes through the whole of it, and like, yeah, but I mainly talk about different types of power struggles and how there's like such poverty and the extreme difference between like riches and poor in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And also about how we are all suppressing ourselves on the, constantly looking at our screens and everything, and commentating, and everyone's commentating. I commentate on this album, obviously. I'm not saying I'm better than anyone, and I'm not preaching to anyone, just to be clear, because I don't want to be seen as like being telling everyone, oh, this, you're all wrong, because, you know, I've got a Facebook and I've got a, what do you call, Instagram and all that, because you have to.
Yeah.
Like I said on the Philistine Philosophies video, my agent told me you'll be left behind. So I was just saying, like, right, you either hop on the wagon or be a mystical tree. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Because that's basically what you are. Because I would much prefer to be, you know, I much prefer the role of a mystical tree than a, you know, hopping on and doing all this suppressing your mind and your creativity. Because if you think about it, the creativity these days is getting sapped up, and there's so few great bands coming through. And I believe it's because there's so much social pressure on people trying to compete and trying to be accepted. And you have to be very, very strong minded if you're young and in a band these days,
mm-hmm.
trying to form a band and trying to get your opinions across, because there's so much pressure. And there's so many things I talk about on this album. But yeah.
So changing gears a little bit, you mentioned cities. I brought up Urban Decay, so I guess we both mentioned it. But in Opacities and in this one as well, there's kind of like I get a Tokyo vibe, if you will. And you have some collaborations with Japan, as I mentioned, Outside the Coma. So I was wondering, like, have you been to Japan many times? What is your connection there?
Yeah. I've been like 8 times to Japan. I had a girlfriend there once, and that was amazing to have a girlfriend there. I won't go too far into that. But yeah. And I went there in 2004 first. We toured with Anthrax and we toured with and Dillinger, and it was a really good package of a tour. And then we went to play Fuji Rock Festival, and that was amazing. And we were all over the place, and then I went back on a holiday. And then in 2012, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, and I was like messing around in this band called The Painted Smiles, and nothing was happening with it, and I wasn't happy with how the progress of the music was going or anything. So I was like, oh, fuck this. I'm going to go to Japan. I just said in my head, where do I want to be? I'll go to Japan. So I left. I left my flat. I was like, right, I'm off. So I just went to Japan, ready to stay there or whatever, just see what happens. Mm-hmm. So I found this amazing singer called Yuri, mm-hmm. and she is like, I had 4 people wanting to audition for me because I put a few feelers out because I had some connections over there. I had some friends and I had, you know, certain people on the underground scene in Tokyo who I knew. And yeah, I just didn't want to audition anyone else because I saw her. She was just it. She's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing, is like there are unbelievably amazing people out there who don't make it these days. Because it's so hard.
Yeah.
Even if they've got what it takes and they've got like that and something really special, you'd see someone else getting somewhere just because they might know, so they've got their fingers in pies in other places, you know what I mean? Higher places, maybe. Mm-hmm. And, but then, you know, it's like, you'd think, oh, this is a fucking waste because this is just emotionless horseshit. You know what I mean? Because that's what I think 90% of the music out there is these days to me. To me, I don't connect to 95% or more or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's in the metal rock world, I suppose. The heavier music, you know what I mean? And maybe I'm not getting it, or maybe, yeah, I'm right. I don't know. I don't know, man. But anyway, that's just my opinion anyway. But I met her, and that was amazing, and she was really cool. And yeah, and then I kept going. I went back a few times to do stuff with Outside the Coma. And then when I rejoined Sixth in 2014, it kind of dried up, but I went back there with Sixth, and we did a few more shows there. I went back again with Sixth, and I did another holiday in between all that there as well. Mm-hmm. So I've been there a lot I've been there as much as a holiday maker as I have playing gigs.
Is there going to be more Outside the Coma ever, or is this just Sixth going to take up too much of your time?
Well, I hope to properly realize that album, because that album was not realized. It wasn't pushed at all. There's a story behind it all, why it wasn't. I was like, literally, early days of Outside the Coma was ridiculous. We were going to get signed to a big label. The A&R dude went. I got told I was getting signed to another label. I signed a contract in Japan, and then the other label thing went. It went wrong. Anyway, whatever, right?
Yeah.
That didn't go right, and I'm annoyed. So I want to make sure that album gets pushed properly one day, maybe with an extra EP or something like that. I don't know. But anyway, back to the sick thing is the album is not really about Tokyo or Japan. That was Opacities. That was about Tokyo and Japan.
Yeah.
Where you have Tokyo Lights, Days of Dreamed, things like that. There's a lot of like, and then you have Each Other and Ourselves, going back to Day Death of a Dead Day, which was a extra Japanese special edition track. And yeah, there's certain tracks, but really on this, I was basing a lot of the lyrics in different places. We traveled a lot of different places around the world, and yeah, I kind of went elsewhere. I had a talk to a friend of mine, and I was trying to freshen up my mind and freshen up my lyrical state before I went into this album, and I was asking his opinion, because there's very few people I would ask opinion, but this dude is insanely. I used to do a band called Sad Season with him, and he said, "You got to stop writing that, write that, write that. You've written enough about that. Let's go on." And I was like, "Yeah, that's a good idea, man." So I banned certain things to write about. You know what I mean?
So how is it with having Joe in the band as well now? So because obviously you guys had previously had a dynamic with Justin. Justin was his name, right?
Yeah.
And now you have a new guy, and it's kind of, presumably it's different. It feels kind of different. Like the dynamic has slightly shifted a little bit. How does that work out for you?
Well, how does that feel to you? I just want to hear your opinion.
Oh, no, I definitely like it. I feel like, I haven't really gotten used to the differences in the voices yet. Like when some parts I can't tell who's doing what. I like Aliases. I like Derangeable, their album from, I think, last year. I think it was cool, but he sounds different on this album. But I overall really like it. I just need to...
I think what it is... let me tell you now, just before I say anything, me and Justin, really good friends. I've been talking to Justin today for about an hour on text, and we got on really, really well, just so that you know. And we got on really well when we reformed the band. We got on really, really well. But Justin didn't like me in the studio when he was doing vocals. He didn't feel comfortable in the studio anyway. He didn't enjoy being in the studio with Sixth. He enjoys being in the studio when he's producing, and he enjoys that. And there's, you know, he didn't enjoy it at all. And I was always their main vocal writer, but on this album, I was 100% vocal writer, and I was 100% lyric writer. I'm always 100% lyric writer. So, So anyway, Joe, I was in the studio with Joe, and I was like co-producing the vocals with Dan Weller when he was producing the vocals for Joe. Mm-hmm. So I was making sure he did it exactly how I wanted. And Joe is great at mimicking other people because he's got a lot of that. He's got a real diverse kind of a huge range he can do.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really, really good rhythmically. And so, yeah, I think that's probably why the dynamic is different. It's not as extreme before because I'm saying do this, do this, do this. And it's so particular. So it's probably... he might sound a little bit like, you know, my style in certain bits where when Justin got this part, even though he would have heard my version of it and they would have had it to reference to, he would do it very, very, you know, quite a lot different. But this one was more true to the demo, I suppose. If you like it, I do a demo. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is how I do it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what I do. Because I record everything in a studio. On my own studio, I've got a good studio of my own. So when I record it, if I capture a take, it's there, it's done.
Yeah,
because I record as I go along. So that's I think why this album will be different to others as well. Not only is it a different voice, but it's a lot closer to how I sung it in, I guess. But he also sang, you know, there's a lot of things like his singing voice is totally different to mine when he's melodically singing and stuff like that. And yeah, I think he brings it to different places. Justin's definitely got a higher voice, and Justin's got great character in his voice. But I think we found a lot of good character in Joe's voice on this album, and there's a lot of depth to it. And yeah, I was really, really pleased with him by the end of the recording.
So you mentioned the album having a different sound, and this is kind of, we've actually discussed this issue on the podcast and speculated before about you guys, and obviously it's now we get a chance to ask you. So I'm wondering, like, you guys kind of originated this scene that we now know as the gent scene. You know, like, you were one of the first bands to kind of have that sound, and then like a lot of other, you guys kind of went away for a while, and a lot of other bands kind of took that sound and ran with it. So now that so much time has passed and you guys are coming back, how do you feel yourself positioned to the scene that has been like created from what you started? And like, how do you feel, what do you feel is your role in this now, like these days?
Well, our role, we feel that we want to bring our sound to the next level, and we're aware of people around us, but we want to continue to sound like our own band, original, mm-hmm. and like we're pushing the boundaries. But we actually wanted to, what we made was, I think we made a more instant impact of an album. I think the vocals, the way I wrote the vocals, it was similar to the way I wrote the Opacities mm-hmm. vocals, which were very, very, like when I wrote the vocals, it was very, very catchy. Everything's even more catchy probably on this album, actually.
Yeah, it is pretty catchy.
Even Opacities. Yeah, so everything's really catchy. And I challenged myself to do that over like crazy time signatures, like sevens and, I mean, you know, mm-hmm. seven, now we're used to that in six, I suppose, but to a lot of people and me in the early days, I was like, what are you doing? Why don't you just play it like so I can nod my head and I can sing? So now I actually enjoy it and I find it real challenging. So I challenge myself to make everything, including all these crazy, like, time signatures and make a good catchy thing out, like, No Wishbones seven and things like that. And making everything sound really catchy and hooky the whole way through, and then to add lyrics to that, it's a huge challenge. Like to make good lyrics once you've done all these crazy rhythms and stuff. When I do the spoken word bits, with the three spoken word bits on this album with backing music, this point, so that was cool. But they're pure poetry, and that's cool. But all the others, every other lyric on the album was written after I'd written poems and stuff like that, but actually fitting all the lyrics to it, it takes a long, long while, and it's a massive craft, and it becomes not an enjoyable process, so, and a grueling process.
To be clear, but is what you're doing is like you kind of write like lyricless vocal rhythms and then try to find vocal lyrics to fit into those?
Okay. Yeah. I do a lot with sounds, mm-hmm. and then I'll make those sounds. So it is really, really, really hard.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But you know, I want to make the best rhythms possible, and stuff like that. And yeah, I do it in a lot of different ways. But the it turned out for Sick, for me to write vocals for Sick, the best way of doing it was getting those rhythms and the melodies and everything, and then. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I'll find my way after.
So, speaking of the spoken word monologue things, that's kind of become a Sick thing. I mean, it was always a thing, but you guys have kind of persisted towards that. The way, I can't find a good way to ask this question, so what do you feel is the point to those? And I don't mean they're pointless, I just mean that what are you trying to convey with these? And like,
well, the first one, I thought, When Will the Forest Speak? I think I was trying to get a poem across, and I wanted it because there was like different characters. I thought, oh, there we go, I can do that. And I just started doing it. Mm-hmm. And then 2 days later, I'd edited it, and then I put it on the album because it was done. And that was the final 2 days. It was like the album went over. That's why that happened. And I was like, wow, that was really good. Mm-hmm. Just experimenting. But since then, I find it a way of getting some pure poetry across, but in an exciting way. Do you know what I mean? Rather than if I was just talking, say, in this voice or something like that. I talk, when I talk in the voiceover voice I do, the, wait a minute. I can't think of the, so when it rains, can you see flower beans? Or that voice.
Amazing.
So I do those, yeah, and then so in one of them, I love it because it's I was able to ask questions, just ask the listener questions, and that was When It Rains. Mm-hmm. It's called When It Rains, and I just asked the listener questions about life, and lots of metaphorical questions about life, and because I want people to think as well. Mm-hmm. You know, that's another thing, is like just making people think, asking them questions, not firing all this information constantly. It's going, this is happening, that's happening, this is happening. No, I was asking you, oh, what do you think about that? You know, I mean, metaphorical questions, which your mind can, like, then it will send your mind into your own, like, thoughts and your own experiences. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think it's really well handled across all of your work. I mean, you just make it interesting because you don't just do like a generic spoken voice. You do the voices. There's kind of a little bit of music going on in the background. It's, you know, compelling. You mentioned voiceover, and I just discovered recently that you're doing voiceover work for the video game No Truce with the Furies.
Yeah.
That game has been on my radar for a while, and it seems super cool. Like, the art style looks great, and I just realized that, like, I'd heard the trailer before, but I didn't realize it was you doing the voice. It's super.
Yeah. Oh, really? That's amazing. You're into it, and you didn't know, and you're a Sick fan. So that's awesome. They'll love to hear that, man.
Yeah, I was. Those guys. When I went to your website to do a little bit of research before the interview to make sure I don't like ask questions that are obvious, and I just was like, oh shit, this is wow. My mind was kind of like blown there. So, is there any other like video game or whatever voiceover work you do?
No, I did an animation a year ago, but it isn't out yet. Just a 5-minute kind of thing, mm-hmm. called Aeon Azor. I'm going to announce that when we work it out. We're just kind of doing some re-audio stuff, but I should say about No Truce with the Furies, since you're a fan of that, and I'd like people to know too, I've actually been made the director of all the voiceovers for that.
Oh, nice.
In UK and Britain. And I've also got certain other, which we're not going to announce them yet, but there's going to be other musicians on there as well who have got interesting voices, maybe interesting normal voices.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is based in America. So, that'll be announced when it'll be announced, you know, when it's all ready to be announced. But there's it's going to be a really interesting game. There's going to be, because I found some really interesting people. I haven't been going to voiceover agents. I looked at a lot of voiceover agencies in UK, and I was like, I wasn't finding what I wanted. And then I just thought in my mind about characters I've met in my life, and also spread the word about. And I found some really, really interesting voice talent and everything. Cause to me, it's about, the person and the character, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's a lot to do with it rather than, I don't know. I think there's probably a lot more interesting voice agencies in America than there is in London, from what I've known so far of London.
So are you looking to do more voiceover type of work for video games and whatnot?
Yeah, I want to do. That's what I want to do. As much as be a musician, I want to be a voiceover artist.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do that. I love it. I really love it. And I like the directing too, as, directing other people and kind of getting characters swimming off into different worlds and stuff. It's kind of very, very, very close to what I do anyway. I kind of do that in my spoken words, man.
Yeah, it would be really cool to see your voice, or hear your voice in more video games. And like, this is a really like particular game to get started with. Like, it just has so much style, and like, it has this really cool concept of like having everything be resolved through conversation and whatnot. I'm super hyped, and like, now that I know you're in it, I'm more hyped. Amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's a really, really warped. It's warped. Yeah. The thing is about the video game, they don't tell everyone, including me, exactly what is going on, mm-hmm. like what's going to happen. They don't tell you the full story. They don't want you to know it. So they're really interesting people. Robert, who's a great writer, and I mean, I met them all in Finland. They're from Estonia. They're based in, and they're really interesting people, and they're really quirky. British Sea Power do the soundtrack, as you would know.
Mm-hmm.
That as well, and it's really interesting. I think a lot of people are going to be hyped on that. The artwork is insane, like you say. It's like oil painting or something. It looks like, it's crazy.
So are you kind of a video game guy, or is this just that it's a voice acting gig for you?
I play football on video games.
Okay.
Like FIFA.
Not a lot of voice acting work there.
No. No, I don't do role play game myself. Games. I don't do role play games myself, but I'm gonna play this one because it's I'm in it and I want to see it and stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. I know some people who do that. Yeah. So I'll be interested, man.
You mentioned the American voice talent in the game, and this is a cool, good segue for something I want to ask. With the promo, I didn't get like liner notes and whatnot, so I might be off base here, but is Spencer from Periphery on one of your songs?
Oh, he's on our song, yeah.
Yeah.
He's on our song, yeah. He's not in the video game, but he's in the song.
Switching gears back
to six. He's on Cracks of Light, yeah. Which is a real dark song. Really, really dark lyrical concept.
So,
but he is such a dude. Like, I really like him, and I like Periphery. They're our best friends. Them and Tooth Grinder. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So
couldn't get better.
Obviously, Nolly from Periphery is producing the album, and I have a few things to ask in the general.
He mixed the album.
Yeah, sorry, my bad. I always mix up the terms for production.
That's cool.
I have a few questions around that space, in that like Periphery is kind of like the band that kind of, you know, brought the djent thing to the mainstream almost, and very heavily influenced by you guys. So how was it kind of, you know, working with those guys in terms of, you know, they're like the, in a way, maybe like a younger version of you or something? I don't know.
What? Him mixing us? They're mixing us.
Now, I mean, in general, this band kind of, in a way, carrying the torch from the older Sixth Material, and then kind of you guys together with them.
This is the thing, is everyone's telling me that, like, they told me that they were madly influenced by us, and I heard lots of things before I met them, that, oh, yeah, you know, Periphery. But when I went and saw Periphery, like, every night on that tour, I listened to their tunes, and I just couldn't hear it myself, man. I thought they just sound like Periphery. They sound like their own thing. So I was like, I understand it's technical and everything, and I just, you know, maybe I wasn't hearing the right songs, but they just didn't.
I feel like
their songs sounded great. They didn't sound like us.
I feel like their older sound a lot more influenced from you guys, and then they kind of built their own thing on top of that, I would say.
Well, that's a good thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a good thing. So I should listen to more of their stuff, but I prefer them for the epicness, the epic way they got about them. Mm-hmm. Sorry, man.
So in terms of working with Nolly, how did that happen?
Well, there was a load of mixers, and I wasn't really involved in the choice of that as much. Dan Weller was a producer, and he was like kind of going through all these mixers, and like we said this, and we said that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then we gave him a try. He did a really good mix of Devin Townsend album. So mm-hmm. we just went, all right, we'll give him a try, man. And yeah, he did really well, I think.
Yeah, it sounds super amazing. Like, really one of the better metal productions I've ever heard, I'd say. It's really cool.
Oh, really? That's cool.
So you put out a video for Vivid from the album, and one other one. I forget which one was the track. No Wishbones. Yeah, there you go. So those are, I feel like, kind of interesting choices for the single to put out. And I feel like from Opacity's Philistine Philosophies was also kind of an interesting choice, in that it's not necessarily wholly representative of what the entire album is. It's kind of a more, I don't know how to describe it, but like the album is kind of very wide in terms of what is present on it. And these two are like pretty specific tracks. So I'm wondering, how did you guys arrive at the decision to pick those two in particular?
You know what? I think it was, I think what we wanted to do, we wanted to give a quirky, slightly dark but humorous side to us mm-hmm. with putting out Vivid, because it's got a very dark subject, but it's a kind of a bit humorous. And we thought it sounds a little bit like maybe first album fans, The Trees Are Dead and Dried Out. Maybe people will be into that, and we'll give them a bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
But the other choice of song we were going to go with was Century of a Narcissist.
Oh, I love that one.
Narcissist. Exactly. And you know what? And now I think of it, I'm thinking we should have put that out. We really should. Because I think that as a lyric video would just be like, what the hell? That is, because the lyrics are Vivid, are very quirky, but they're kind of like a story about a dream and not being able to get out of a dream, and kind of, because it was really, really warped. I kind of couldn't get out of this dream state, and I wrote it about that
mm-hmm.
when I was dreaming, and my friend was watching me, and I was just walking on the spot, and pressing all these buttons, but I was actually just in this dream in mm-hmm. a hotel room in a dream. And yeah, and it was kind of reoccurring for a little while, but then it stops. And yeah, anyway, I think Century of a Narcissist could have been would have been a better choice, but I don't know. We just went with it. We thought, yeah, this is good. Oh, and also, you know, we were playing it on the bus and we asked a few people and we also went on other people's opinions who were around us at that moment when we were on tour. Do you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And Vivid come out and, but yeah, maybe our manager was right saying Century of a Narcissist.
Well, I feel like,
because I think he was right.
That's kind of a more like metal song, I guess, whereas the other ones are more, different, I guess. So I think there's value in that. And I mean, I'm sure when the album comes out and people listen to it, everybody's gonna love all the tracks and they'll get their chance to kind of listen to Century of the Narcissists. And I also really like Riddles of Humanity, by the way. That's probably my second favorite track.
Yeah, that the riffage in that song is insane.
Yeah.
I love those riffs when they and the end bit when it kicks into that riff again mm-hmm. and then the vocals go with it again. And yeah, that is one of my favorite bits on the album.
Yeah.
I like that. And then Weavers of Woe is like one of the most brutal songs we've written since Sanguine Seas of Bigotry, probably. It's mm-hmm. probably more angry than that as well. I was absolutely livid when writing. I really was. I was so angry and it comes across because like I said, if I'm angry and it happens, I have something very passionate I'm singing about, it's just recorded. It's there. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? I don't have to, all right, I'll remember, I'll save that up. And then when we go in the studio on this date to this date, then I'll be able to sing it. Like it doesn't always happen like that. So
yeah,
it's great. So yeah, Weavers of Woe is a great song. I think a lot of people will love that because, you know, and then also No Wishbones, that was an odd song to put out, I suppose.
I mean,
because that's so quirky, that's so so different, and so yeah.
I mean, regardless, the album is awesome, and like I think there's no real bad choice to put out a song from the album. I mean, maybe the spoken word tracks by themselves won't get people as excited.
Yeah, I wouldn't put that out to start with.
But no. Beyond that, you know, I think it's great. By the way, one random question that's been on the back of my mind. On Opacities, you guys had a track Under the Weeping Moon, and Opeth also have a track on their first album, I think, called Under the Weeping Moon, exact same name. I was wondering if that, like, is that just a coincidence? Because it's just, like, such a particular name that, like,
It's a coincidence because I said it Under the Weeping Moon.
I mean,
I type it in. I typed it in after it had gone on the album, and then this thing comes out, Opeth. I'm like, what? I wouldn't have done, you know, I would have written it slightly different, so I didn't realize that.
But it is such a, like, you guys turn of phrase, so it's like, it works, and I didn't notice it until someone pointed it out to me, but yeah, it's...
It's only when you type it into a search engine
but,
that you find, well, or you know,
Opeth. Yeah, I mean, but you know, you guys have, like, come up on the search results pretty high, like, you guys are competing now.
Well, that's good. So, I couldn't believe it. Well, maybe they'll type in some new album tracks and be all right.
Yeah. So you mentioned kind of being angry and having that come through in the studio. You have like a really super expressive and unique vocal style. I was wondering how you kind of came to develop that.
I think it was, I think my vocal style was due to a lot of experimentation. I think in my early days I was doing a lot of different accents and stuff like that before I was even singing. I was like, I enjoyed impersonating accents from around England, from everywhere, and you hear that a lot on How May I Help You on the first album. Mm-hmm. And we did a video for that, and very silly song and subject matter, I might say, but yeah. And so working out that and working out how I combine voices and how I combine techniques, and I constantly like just explore that, explore breathing, explore so many different like ways of there's so many different ways you can do vocals, you know. Mm-hmm. and I am certainly not a conventional vocalist. I'm not, like, you know, I didn't just start singing like an opera singer or something like that, or whatever. Like since I was young, I'm a self-trained kind of vocalist, I would call myself. So yeah, I don't know. Experimentation is how I developed what I do. And also that I feel very, very strongly about certain things, and that kind of comes out.
Can you elaborate on that?
Well, just everything I sing about, is like, you know, if I'm passionate about something, I'm usually very passionate about it, and it kind of comes across in the song.
The video for How May I Help You, now that you mention it, I remember like that. I don't remember where I saw it, but like back in the day, I saw it and I was like really just interested in how weird the video was and how weird the just vocal styles you were doing were. And I was like super into it back then. And a lot of my friends back in Turkey were like, dude, this is weird. I don't get this. And it's like, but by the virtue of them kind of being turned off by how weird it was, I felt more inclined to kind of, you know, play it to them and listen to it. And then like, I kept playing and listening, and I grew super, super into the band. And like, ever since then, I've just been like, really into all the different vocal stuff you do. So it works.
It went well in Japan and stuff, that video, and it was on it got to number one on the playlist on MTV2 in UK. Mm-hmm. So that was really, really good to do that for a band like us to get on that. And yeah, so it did really well, that video did. But also, the thing is about the first album, because some of the lyrics were like kind of jokey and a bit shock factor. Mm-hmm. Quite a lot of them were before I developed into to develop my poetry. Like before I actually started really calling it poetry. So I'd say, I prefer it in America because people have heard Death of a Dead Day and onwards, and it's just good lyric in my opinion. Mm-hmm. It's my better lyrics in and my better, you know, my better poetry than onwards. So they consider it, everyone talks about lyrics and poetry to me in America, and I love it. Where in England I hardly ever get asked about it. You know, it's the odd, you know. I don't know, man. I think in America people really, really look into things. Like they look in depth to lyrics and poetry, and they try, you know, not saying no one does in England, just not as many.
So I guess then we could talk poetry. Are you like a fan of poetry as well, and you kind of channel that, or do you just, you know, are you kind of like a self-trained poet in a sense?
Well, I would say I'm self-trained, but then I would look at people like, I got a lot better like reading Leonard Cohen's poetry, because I love his poetry. I've got so many of his books. Mm-hmm. And also Jim Morrison, even though his Took You Into Another World, when the, you know, in the Doors songs and everything, his poetry was amazing. And Lou Reed, I like a lot of it. A lot of singers like I got into Tom Waits. Mm-hmm. More recently, some of that, but I'm really into Leonard Cohen. Really, really love his stuff. But I don't want to sound like Leonard Cohen when I'm writing poetry. I want to sound like me.
Well, you don't.
So I've got my own style. Yeah, I don't sound like Leonard. The thing is about Leonard, he humbles you. You think you've done something awesome, and then I just go, oh, yeah, all right, Leonard. I'll put on one of his CDs, like even his latest CD he did before he died. It was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Just amazing. But, yeah, I'd say it's just like his expression. It's great. It's therapeutic, man.
Yeah.
Poetry as a like singing is.
So do you think you said earlier on that you kind of don't really connect with a lot of music these days? Is there any music that you feel is particularly kind of pushing the boundary and like really speaks to you? Well, that those don't necessarily have to be the same thing, but you know.
Yeah. Well, there's people who push the boundaries in different ways, like there's this dude called Smog. He's got a different name now. He's really cool. He's really different. Godspeed You Black Emperor. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're an old band, but they've come back again. and they always push it. And Diane's Word, I thought they were really quirky and different. And
the South African rap group, right?
Yeah. I love their art. Overall, their art is just amazing, I think. And who's it? I'm sure. I like Periphery and Tooth Grinder. We just toured with in England, no, in America, I mean. And I'm trying to look, because I was definitely listening to some people, man. But I'm trying to look at CDs right now. Primus.
Oh, Primus, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Speaking of Godspeed, this is kind of off topic, but last year Godspeed did a thing where in New York they played with a dance group. Me and Eden, my co-editor at Heavy Black, we went to see that, and it was something really interesting. It was called the Holy Body Tattoo Group, and the performance was called Monumental. And it's these people in like office worker clothes, and it's about like kind of modern dance, and kind of symbolizes the stuff like again, kind of going to the themes of urban decay, modern repression and stuff like that. And all the while these people are dancing, there's like a screen, like a semi-transparent screen, and behind them Godspeed is kind of playing live to the sound of this. And there's like sometimes text projected onto the screen. It was a really interesting experience. You'd probably be really into that.
That's cool. Yeah. That sounds wicked.
If you get a chance to like check that out somehow someday, I'm sure they'll do more of it eventually.
Yeah, I definitely want to go and see them again. I saw them in London, but I'd love to see them doing something like that. That sounds amazing.
Yeah,
I was going to say the Lennon, Claypool Lennon DeLorean. I listened to that recently. That was really cool, psychedelic.
Mm-hmm.
John Lennon's son, Sean Lennon, I think, and Les Claypool. That was awesome.
I mean, anything Les Claypool does is like really interesting.
Yeah, he's a genius. I like him very much, man. But yeah, I can't really think on the spot. I know there is some stuff that I've been thinking, more modern stuff, but I mean, I can't think right now.
Mm-hmm. Is there, I guess we can like slowly start closing it out. It's been a while and I'm sure it's kind of late there right now, but, one other thing, is there any like stuff that you draw inspiration from beyond music and poetry and video games? I guess, well, you don't, but like, I don't know, any particular like books, movies, TV stuff you're into?
Oh, I'm into, I love lots of series, like, I'm really into, I really do like Clint Eastwood quite a lot.
Okay.
I love a lot of his, and everything he directs I really like. And obviously like I mean, everyone loves most people love Breaking Bad and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Studio Ghibli. I love Studio Ghibli.
Oh, they're awesome.
The animations. Yeah, I went to the museum when I was in Japan. There's a lot of different things. I mean, I'm a big, big football, soccer, you call it in America.
I'm Turkish. You can say football.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, proper football. Yeah, sorry, proper. There we go. That's all the followers gone. So, man. Yeah, I'm into Watford football team. We're in a Premier League now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just like a small, you know, we're a small town. That's where we come from. Like, Sixth comes from the Watford scene. And not a lot of people know, but I was a promoter in the start of the Watford scene. And I was at, you know, they're doing a documentary on it right now, but I was actually the first person who was putting on all the shows, man.
Huh.
So it's pretty crazy, because that's where Sick performed for a scene of people. And so it's a very small scene, Watford. Up the road, 10 minutes, is St. Albans, where Enter Shikari. And then through the Watford scene is Gallows. I don't know if you know them.
Yes.
Yeah. So I heard about that because Frank said, he said to someone in an interview, then I got contacted. It was that, like, oh, right. Well, Gallows formed through the scene you put on. And I was like, wow, I didn't realize that, man.
Well, I mean,
that was when I was in the shadows.
The UK scene has gotten like really strong in the past few years in terms of like the modern technical music type of stuff. Like, are you kind of plugged into any of that stuff?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm not. I'm not plugged in at all.
Like, did you guys play at UK Tech Fest or whatever?
Oh yes, yes, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
that
yes,
stuff
yes.
is what
so
I'm talking
I
about.
I am slightly plugged in. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I went there. To be honest with you, I don't really know many tech bands. To be completely honest with you, I listen to Johnny Cash and Leonard Cohen.
That's not surprising. Prime.
I love lots of different stuff, and I do. When I hear some really good metal stuff now and again, and I do, but I like to when I do my music, I like to put all my focus into that, like heavy music, and when I play it, I get that out of me, and I get that side out of me. And I know some people like to wake up, listen to metal from the beginning of the day till the end of the day, every day, but I just don't. It's just not my. I like to keep it varied. That's just how I am, man.
Yeah, and I can understand that. A lot of artists that I've spoken to and say stuff like that. So it's you don't have to. So I guess kind of closing it up. That's more or less what I wanted to talk about. Is there anything you wanted to kind of mention or bring up or like, draw the attention of the listeners to? You know, you guys have an album coming out, obviously, but beyond that.
Well, I just want to come back to America. That's what I want to tell people. I really do. I love being in America. I felt great personally. And it's a big thing about feeling how you feel somewhere. And I really did love it in America. And I really, really, really love to all you American listeners to please give this album a chance and show your friends if you like it. Show your friends and keep it going because I want to do as much touring in America as we can, really.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for joining the podcast. And hopefully you can come around this side of the pond and.
I hope so, yeah.
I'll see you guys.
Again.
Yeah. All right.
Rocking.
Bye.
Cheers, mate. Bye.